It is Locked On Jazz for the 29th of July. The summer interview series continues with the Salt Lake Tribune's Andy Larson. And then, or first, we sit down with Jeff Green. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! Hi, I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers. Today's show's a lot of fun. We'll start it off by sitting down with new Jazz man Jeff Green, who's just an adult. Like, that's what we'll jump out to you this week, talking to Ed Davis and Jeff Green. Ed Davis had the great line at the press conference: when I was a young kid, I didn't understand why the vets wanted to play with vets, and now I want to play with vets. And you can see out of Jeff Green that he is just simply a vet. So pretty cool to hear that conversation. Trevor Booker joined me for Locked On NBA today. As you may have heard already, he had some great insights, some good takes. So when you're done with this, go grab that. And then Andy Larson is our interview from the Salt Lake Tribune. And as would expect, for those who know Andy, he and I get a little geeky right out of the chute, dig deep into the whole favors, Gobert, and what it means to switch out of that in this episode. So that's what's coming up. I wanted to thank some of the iTunes reviews. Appreciate the hard work came in from, looks like, White Iverson. Thank you very much. Mitchell, most informative place for a Jazz fan. Thank you very much. Super appreciate that. And to Pariso, the same. Thank you guys very much for the 5-star iTunes reviews. I had not really kept an eye on that before, as I mentioned, and to see 872 reviews and see 811 of those 5 stars. And frankly, the ones that complain, I think, are also pretty legitimate, like times where I've had technical difficulties or things of that nature. So I don't disagree on some of the complaints, but I certainly appreciate those of you that have been kind enough to give us 5-star iTunes reviews. It's super nice of you. All right, so this week we'll have today Jeff Green and Andy Larson, Ed Davis and Andy Larson, and then Andy Larson on the third episode. That's the plan for the week. Let's get it going right away and sit down with Jeff Green.
Here with Jeff Green, one of the newest members of the Utah Jazz. The word on the is a lot of, that Mike Conley was really important for you to come to Utah. How much was that a part of the decision?
I wouldn't say it was the whole 100% sole part of me making the decision, but it was a huge part. Having the chance of playing with Mike together in Memphis, it was great experience, being the guy he is, the team player he is, the player he is, having the opportunity to play alongside him. Again, I knew it would be fun. Our families are close. We're going to Disney World next month together. We have 2 kids the same age. Our wives are close. So, having somebody who I know, who I've known since college, who our families are close, it was a huge part of my decision.
Looking at, from 30,000 feet at your last few NBA experiences, some look like they were probably incredible, and some mm-hmm. look like they were incredible, but in a totally different way. Yeah. How yeah. much did that weigh in that what you've learned from the various places you've been recently of choosing to come here?
Definitely, that was the biggest part. Knowing the personnel that the organization has structured, the team they structured from the front office, the owners, hearing how great of an organization this is, how well it is ran. It was definitely a big part of me wanting to be a part of it. It's rare that you get a team that is very unselfish, a team that, plays for each other, who, they do things the right way. They play hard every night. Having a coach who is a player's coach, who studies this craft, who loves the game, front office, who, communicates. They are there for their players. They try their best to, do the right things to, keep things running smooth. It's rare that you get everything in one. And, to have the opportunity to be a part of something like that was special.
How do you check on that? Who'd you talk to? You've been around enough.
I've been around, a long time to know a lot of personnel around the league. My agent, Daniel Cantor, has been in this in this realm of, you know, NBA with David Falk for a long time. And, you know, they've been on the phone with a lot of teams throughout the years since David, you know, has been, you know, part of this league since the 80s. Danielle has been part of this league for, you know, over, you know, almost 15, 20 years now. So it's a lot of voices that know, you know, a lot of these organizations, and they know how well this organization is run. So it wasn't – I didn't have to go far to, you know, hear a lot of stories about this organization.
And I think David Falk represented Quinn at some point, or at least something.
Well, I don't know that part. maybe.
Like, he didn't have a long playing career, but I thought out of Duke, maybe.
Maybe.
I'm a big numbers guy and love the league junkie. And so who's Jeff Green? And I said, actually, I don't know anymore. Mm-hmm. You shot 47% of your shots as threes last year. 3 years ago, I think you shot about 21% of your shots as threes. Nice. Like, so who is Jeff Green at 30 some odd years old as a player? Yeah.
It's the way the league has gone. You know, it's threes and layups. you know, it's changed since I first got in the league. I had this conversation literally probably 48 hours ago. You know, we were playing pickup in Miami. I was talking to Brandon Knight, and we were talking to Bam, who plays for Miami, and just, you know, he's 22, and we were just telling him how this league has changed from when I first got in the league of, you know, you had to have two bigs. Mid-range was the go-to shot back then, or it was corner threes, or it was a post-up. And now it was – threes, get a layup, and that's in the first 15 seconds of the shot clock. So my game has adapted. As you just said, you can see the transition of how my game has improved in certain ways of, you know, finding my niche in to staying in this league, to being the player I've been. So, you know, I'm a guy who's, you know, going to, you know, work hard, who's going to, you know, come in and play the right way and do what's best for my team to win.
If I look at three numbers, I think there's 27% shooting in Orlando from three. There's 33% for your career, and I think there's 35 or 36% last year from three. Which one of those is most accurate?
Probably last year.
Like it.
Yeah, probably last year. But that's just the growth. That's just the growth. Orlando was a tough year, you know, playing hurt. And then, you know, I had a great year in Cleveland. Getting to the finals, playing alongside LeBron, learning a lot. And last year was just one of those years where we just couldn't get over the hump, suffering from a lot of injuries in Washington, a team who, you know, we had to rely on a lot of young guys with the trades and then, you know, middle of the season. So, you know, but, you know, through all that, you know, I still was able to, you know, prevail in certain numbers, like, you know, in this analytic world. You know, hopefully I can – that number can increase here, and that's the plan. You know, that's, you know, I work hard, and I work hard for a reason to, you know, try to improve in, you know, each aspect of my game. And, you know, since I have a broad variety of things I have to work on because I can play inside, outside, you know, dribble, you know, bring the ball. You know, it's a lot of things I have to work on, but, you know, one thing I try to harp on is, you know, making sure that I'm, you know, consistent in, you know, my shot. Because, you know, with a team like we have here, there's going to be a lot of open shots in with every position. So I have to be ready to shoot and knock it down.
Other number to point out quickly, 100 dunks last year, or in the last 2 years, Donovan's had like 50, maybe 60.
Yeah,
so let's
just point that
out. All right, final two questions for you quickly. Donovan Mitchell asks you about playing with LeBron in an NBA championship environment, what would you tell him?
What is the question?
Just that NBA, that year. What does it take? What does it mean? What was it like to be in the NBA Finals?
First off, I'll say it takes a lot of luck. It takes a lot of patience. It takes a lot of teamwork. And it takes, you know, defense. I believe, you know, when I was in Cleveland, we weren't the best defensive team. But when the playoffs started and it came down to getting stops, we were zoned in on the fundamentals of what we had to do to get stops. And that's when, you know, that the training camps, the everyday repetition of defensive drills, of, you know, communication, that's where it paid off. And I believe, you know, those are the top things that, you know, you're going to need. We have all the tools to getting to the finals here. And I believe that we can get to the finals, but, you know, it starts in training camp. And, you know, it's going to take some time for us to all get on the same page. But I believe, you know, if we continue to fight for each other and, you know, to play for each other, I think we can get there and, you know, we'll be okay.
I think we're out of time, but appreciate it. Okay, and I didn't mean to neglect the heart surgery. We'll get to it some other day. The Players Tribune article about it is great. If anyone wants to go check it out, Jeff wrote about the heart surgery he had, I think, 6 years ago now. Seven years ago now, so worth checking that out.
Really interesting to hear him talk about the evolution of his career and how things have changed and all those aspect of things. So hopefully that's a nice addition. I think he'll be an important piece and knows how to play, knows how to be a champion, knows how to be in a winning environment. So awfully, awfully cool. Today's show brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. Murdoch Chevy's located out in Woods Cross. I think I'm going to be driving a new Chevy here a little bit. So I switch between my Hyundais and my Chevys and excited. The last one I drove was an Equinox. It was super great. And that is one of their SUV lineups. The truck lineup, I think we know well. That's the Silverado as well as the Colorado. We had the Colorado for a while. That was terrific. Particularly, I think we had it last summer. And the Chevy lineup of cars just done beautifully. And then you get the fact that the Murdochs, 90-plus years in Utah. That's part of their bread and butter, is just being a part of our culture. The 2019 Suburban and 2019 Tahoes are 0% APR for 72 months right now. So some great, fantastic deals over at Murdoch Chevy. Blake runs the one in Wood Cross. They also up in Logan. You can feel it the minute you walk in of who the Murdochs are, what they're trying to make sure. They call it the no regrets experience. That no regrets experience is making sure that you have nothing that you regret about choosing the Murdoch family. And they want to make sure that they have the signature of having their family stamp on your experience out there. Go check it out. The new 2019 Blazer's pretty sweet as well. Maybe that's what I'll get to drive coming up here. It's all of Murdoch Chevy. Check it out. Woods Cross as well as in Logan. 90-plus years in Utah. Part of the bread and butter of what Utah is. It's Murdoch Chevy. The summer interview series continues. Thanks again to Ron Boone for week number one. Andy Larson, Salt Lake Tribune writer, joins us for week number two. The whole point of this is we're going to talk to about 7-8 guys over the next weeks and get different perspectives on things going with the Jazz. Hopefully we're not all so groupthinky that we end up the same, and Andy and I are probably pretty similar on some things, but hopefully we'll go back and forth pretty well. So we welcome on our summer interview series, week number two, part one, Andy Larson. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, David. How are you?
Good. I really appreciate you taking the time and joining us, and congratulations for you. I think this is now, what, year three or year four for you that it's going to be on the beat?
This is my first credential was 2013, the last Ty Corbin year. So this is, wow, year six, I guess, is what that means already. But it's my second with the Tribune now.
All right. Yes, I was ignoring the KSL years in that question. That's a good point on your part. So that's like there was a guy that was with us for a while in the Jazz that someone, they tried to claim was a rookie. He was like, I ain't a rookie. It might have been George Niang, actually. He's like, I am not a rookie. Like, I've been to two different teams and been cut twice. I am not a rookie. So,
he doesn't have to wear the backpack.
That's right. So the KSL years do count. I was just thinking about the Salt Lake Tribune. So, anyway, all right, let's get to it. The big move was the Jazz decision to move past Faves and to really play every minute of the night with the ability to spread the floor. But this was also a team, its identity has been defensively. What's your thought on this move and what it means?
I think overall you look at, and I'm a big plus minus guy, so you look at the lineups with and without Derek Favors next to Rudy Gobert on the floor, and you look at the realization that you can't play those guys together more than 12 to 15 minutes a night. And I think moving on, and getting, if you move on with the caliber of player that the Jazz did and getting Bogdanovich, I think it makes sense. If you move on for, you know, a replacement level guy, just to put a, you know, if say you're just playing Jeff Green out there and that was the only new perimeter addition that the Jazz signed, I think that would be one story, and I think that would be a, you know, you probably take a step back, lose a step in terms of what you get from the team. But if you add Bogdanović and you still have Joe Ingles and Donovan Mitchell and Mike Conley and the shooting that the Jazz have, I think I don't think there's really any question that that's a positive move forward just based on how well those spacing lineups around Rudy Gobert have worked.
All right, so when Andy and I are together, we're going to have like an in-the-weeds alert, and it's taking us a grand total of 3 minutes. We are going into the weeds. I actually think, and I haven't been able to hold this conversation with anyone else, and you might be the only one who will follow me on this conversation. I'm actually not entirely sure that Rudy Gobert, with a replacement-level player and a spread floor, isn't better than Favors and Gobert. And let me explain to you why. Last year, Favors and Gobert together, plus 3.4. You're a plus-minus guy, right? Plus 3.4. Crowder and Gobert last year, who the year before were unbelievable, or only okay last year, they were plus 6. Jay with Favors was plus 4. Tabo and Gobert were plus 8. And Tabo and Favors were actually like plus 22. So of the five different combinations we used of center and stretch four, and I didn't have Niang in here, he didn't play much in the regular season, the worst lineup we put on the floor every night was the first 6 minutes of the first and third quarter. And that was true the year before as well.
Yeah, I'm with you on this. I think the only question there is, are those lineups as good? You know, the Tabo Cephalosha with Derek Favors, the Jay Crowder with Derek Favors lineup, as good with a normal backup center. Now, I think Ed Davis is probably a top five backup center in the league, so this is mitigated somewhat. But I think some of why those other lineups didn't work as well as they did was because Derek Favors is pretty good at basketball, right?
All right, so let's get I came very well prepared for my own interview. So Rudy with – I'm rolling these numbers up just for listener point, by the way. I'm rounding up or rounding down just because it's easier to get one number to try to grasp quickly when you're listening.
Okay.
So just everyone gets that. So Rudy with Favors last year was plus 8. Rudy without Favors was plus 8. Rudy with Favors was plus 3. And the key point you're bringing up is that Favors without Rudy was plus 4.5. So just right in the middle. And that's the key point. So – what we were doing is we were playing 22 minutes a night of Rudy without Favors at plus 8. We were playing 13 minutes a night of Favors without Rudy, so Favors in a stretch at plus 4.5. And we had 13 minutes a night of the starting lineup, which was only plus 3. So the real question is, to me, if we take those 13 minutes a night that was the starting lineup and put Rudy out there with a stretch lineup where he was plus 8, is he going to be plus 8 for all 35 minutes of that, even though some of those minutes are now against starters? To me, that's where being a plus-minus guy, like you said earlier, is the one flaw in this, is like, okay, they were the worst lineup, but they were also always playing starters. Now,
right,
that stretch lineup will be playing starters. Can they be plus 8 for those now 35 minutes a night where Gobert will always be on the floor with a 4 capable of shooting?
To me, I think so. I'm with you. I think that lineup is really, really good. The starting lineup, and I don't care if you include Joe Ingles or if you're going to start Royce at the 4, or you're going to start Jeff Green at the 4. I think regardless of what happens, I think you are in that plus 8 realm. It's just, to me, it is those 12 to 16 minutes a night that you're not playing with Rudy Gobert, are those, instead of a plus 3 or whatever it is, are they a minus 3? You know, how much do you lose because you don't have Derek Favors playing with your bench lineup?
So we'll dig into this with Andy Larson here at the Salt Lake Tribune, because again, I knew where you were going to go. And the answer to that question is you to be equal to last year in now only 13 minutes a night, maybe 14 without Rudy, if you reduce it, you're going to have to be even. We'll continue with Andy Larson and discuss whether we think the Jazz in those other now probably 13 to 15 minutes a night can be even as we continue. Summer interview series with Andy Larson here on Locked On Jazz. A lot of fun stuff going on Locked On Podcast Network, including giving you some great opportunities. Bombas are the most comfortable socks in the history of feet. Plus, for every Bombas purchase, they donate a pair to someone in need. Find out more about what feet daydream about at bombas.com. Use Locked On today to get 20% off at bombas.com. Promo code Locked On. Continuing with Andy Larson as on the summer interview series next. I got into the same conversation I've got into with numerous people recently, and it was about the real estate world. And it's just, you know what? Like, I got it. When their houses were $100,000 and we were paying 6%, it all made sense. So why am I paying real estate agents for that? Well, guess what? Homie has changed that. Homie has done an incredible job, and now with Homie, you pay a set fee and when you sell your home. But you also can buy your home through Homie. That's right. You've seen the funny, bright, teal billboards around town and heard me talk about how you can hire Homie to sell your house for thousands. But you may not know local Homie agents can also buy any home for sale. So when you come to choose a Homie agent versus a traditional agent, customers rave about their service. They also do what most agents can't. They give you up to $5,000 back to help you on closing costs and fees. Homie will refund you $5,000 back so you can buy more home with your money. It's simple. Just text LOCK to 88588, and you'll be connected with a Homie agent to help you find your dream home. Tour homes, make offers, negotiate the best deal, and work to get you $5,000 back. You also can go to homie.com and request a tour of any home for sale with a click of a button. Text LOCK, L-O-C-K-E, to 88588. So there's the question for you, my friend. Can they be even in the minutes that Ed Davis is on the floor?
To me, I think it depends how much Quinn wants to stagger it, right? Like, if they can play one or two starters on the floor at all times, then it's, you know, you can go Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell for 36 minutes a night, or you can go Mike Conley for in the starting unit for 18 and Donovan for 18 and kind of stagger those guys like the Houston Rockets did with Chris Paul and James Harden. I think probably the right mix for the Jazz is kind of a mix of that. But to me, a strictly bench lineup of something like Emmanuel Mudiay, Dante Exum, Jeff Green, Royce O'Neal, and Ed Davis is going to have more problem scoring even than the Jazz bench did last year because of the difference between what Ed Davis and Derek Favors does.
Part of this gets into, can the Jazz be as good defensively, right?
I honestly think they can be. I think Ed Davis as a defender is essentially as good as Derek Favors was. You look at Derek Favors' rim protection numbers, he was the single best rim protector in the league, but what Ed Davis can do out on the perimeter a little bit and then also inside against bench units, I mean, getting second in the league in defensive real plus minus, I think Ed Davis is an excellent bench defender, and I thought that was an excellent pickup by the Jazz.
And by the way, I want to point out on that favor stat, and I love it, and I'm all buying that stat the day I can find out what that number is when Rudy Gobert is off the floor, but I'm not buying that stat until I know how many of those shots also had Rudy Gobert within 5 feet of the offensive player.
Okay.
Right? I mean, I you and I love our numbers, but I think one of the keys with numbers is understanding when they might not be great. Here's the one that jumps out to me on this defensive issue. Going back to those five-man lineups of last year, the single worst defensive lineup that the Jazz had of their bigs of big combinations by over 3 points per 100 possessions, so by a large margin, was Jay Crowder and Rudy Gobert. So it was still good. It was 102.6. And Gobert and Tabo were 98, and Gobert and Favors were 99. And over the years, Gobert and Smalls have actually been as good as Gobert and Favors. So that leads to a question. Was Jay Crowder as bad defensively as his real plus minus said he was, which is one of the worst defensive players in the league? Or is that a sign that it's going to be hard for the Jazz to be elite defensively with somebody that's not named Derek Favors next to Rudy Gobert?
I don't think that's it. To me, that is the Jazz are playing the Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert lineups. I agree. They are 3 points worse than the other big combinations, but they are playing the Jay Crowder, Rudy Gobert lineups against their opposition's best lineups. You know, that was Quinn Snyder's go-to look at the end of games, heck, in second quarters, in third quarters, in times where he needed his best lineups out on the floor. That was what he played against the opposition's best scoring lineups as well. So, I agree with you that I don't think Jay Crowder was a tremendous defender. I don't think he was. I think you can argue that he was even a below average defender based on where he was in terms of spots on the floor, in terms of following Quinn's system. Certainly not the most vertically athletic of guys, certainly strong and everything else. But yeah, I don't think like he's a perfect defensive specimen. I'm not that worried about replacing Jay Crowder's defensive prowess. I do think Bogdanović is probably a little bit worse of a defender than Jay Crowder is, but I think Jeff Green is at about that same level. And so I guess I'm not worried about the Jazz with Rudy Gobert at five, with four bigs or four smalls around him, four perimeter players, no matter who they put out there. I think the Jazz would be fine defensively.
Jay Crowder played 27 minutes a game last year as the four. Derek Favors played about 12, and I'd say Thabo averaged about 9. In 50 games that he played, and George Niang averaged exactly 9 in the 59 games he played. What do you think the power forward minute breakdown is this year?
I think it is either I do think Royce O'Neal gets some of it. And I don't know. To me, it makes sense to put him in the starting lineup as a token starter, if you will, and because of his incredibly low usage, it makes sense to play him with the starting lineup. Because of his defensive prowess, it makes sense to start him with the rest of the starters, and so you play him 12 to 18 minutes a game there. And then I think the rest is Jeff Green, and I think you play 20 minutes of Jeff Green a night, and you play 15 minutes of Royce O'Neal. That leaves you 13 minutes of one of Joe Ingles or Bojan Bogdanović doing it, which I think they can do. And then I think you've got George Niang also playing whatever that is, 6 to 10 minutes left over, whatever he needs to as rotations change. But I mean, for me, talking to Dennis Lindsay and talking to the Jazz front office about this, they want to be flexible based on who they play. And who you play at the four, I think, is maybe the Jazz's pivot point at this point, where you say, if you're playing Griffin or another four that can back you down, there aren't that many of those guys left, but you have to play a different rotation than you do against the Houston Rockets or the Portland Trailblazers or whatever that looks like. You play a very different rotation based on who your opponent is, and you have that flexibility now because you do have Jeff Green, you do have George Niang, you do have Bogey. You can figure out what works against some of these lineups if the physicality is going to be too much at the four spot.
My feeling on lineups, I actually think this is a little bit of a money ball issue where teams are making mistakes still. Who's our best five on the floor?
I mean, it's easy, right? Like, it's Mike Conley, Donovan, Joe, Bogey, and Rudy.
Then start that five. It's the only lineup that is guaranteed to play 10 minutes a night. Like, you fans who don't have access to the data you and I have, or aren't geeky enough to take the time. If you went and go look at popcorn.net, machine.net, or lineups at the end of it, it is stunning how few minutes five-man combinations play together, right? Like, there were only, I think, 9 five-man lineups in the league last year that played over 500 minutes together, and there were only 16 that played over 400 minutes together. So if you have a good five-man unit, just start them, and start them every night against whomever, and get them so that they're playing 12 minutes a night, and then maybe they always close, and maybe they don't. Like, there's a chance they actually play 18 minutes a night together. That's incredible if that's your best five-man unit.
But to me, I don't know that Royce O'Neal is, first of all, Royce O'Neal in the starting lineup is, I think that is a good lineup, first of all, five-man lineup. And second of all, because he's afraid to take shots, or at least was last year. You know, maybe he showed in the playoffs that he's less reticent to take those shots. Great. But if he's going to be an 11% usage guy, I want the 11% usage guy next to all of Donovan and Rudy and Mike Conley and Bojan Bogdanovic, so that all those guys who are used to being, have even experience as number one offensive creators, can play next to Royce O'Neal and his defensive capabilities, and you put Royce next to against your opponent's best player as the defender. To me, that makes more sense than asking Royce and Dante and Emmanuel Mudiay to be part of your bench lineup.
I kind of buy that. I'm still holding on my play your five best guys. But I hear that argument.
Play your five best guys at the end of the game. I'm totally there. You know, do the thing when you have to do it. You know, I think if you're looking to maximize what you're getting out of your five players in the lineup, then you can't have your five best shooters and you can't have your five best creators in your lineup, but because those guys are just not going to be creating all the time. To me, I think Royce fulfills a role with the starters more than he does with the bench.
Just out of curiosity, who are you trying to talk into coming off the bench?
I think Joe Ingles. To me, because Joe has said that he is willing to play off the bench in the past. Now, you know, what he says to the media and what is real may or may not be different things. But he has told us that he has gone to Quinn in the past and says, hey, I will play off the bench if he needs to. And so to me, I think I would rather have Joe play off that second unit and play still that 24 to 27 minute a night role and come off the bench and, you know, kind of lead the second unit in a team that may have some creation problems in the second unit.
I'm not trying that until January. Just to put that out there. He is Andy Larson. I'm David Locke. This is Locked on Jazz. This has been Day One with Andy Larson. Coming up on Wednesday this week, I sit down with Ed Davis and Andy Larson will join us as well on Wednesday of this week. If you haven't caught it already, Trevor Booker is my guest on Locked on NBA. He had some interesting comments when he listed his championship caliber teams. He left off one or two, and he also had some really interesting comments about the Jazz. That's at Locked on NBA today. This has been Locked on Jazz, part of the Locked on Podcast Network.